this week on The Inside Flap.
Oh, you know I'm prepared for this.
Okay, I'm sure you are.
I can come over and sit on the floral settee and do this with you.
Oh, nice, nice. I like, good, that. I like that. All right, all right. Very
we'll have
nice.
To have that. We'll have to have that happen.
We're going to have to make that happen.
Kick Andrew aside.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You would think there's two girls in the elevator, Izzy and Petra. You would think that along with them in the elevator is Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, and Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th. That's how loud these screams are.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Sitting across the room to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And on the other side of Charlie, the English Bulldog, on the couch to my left is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior,
good to have everybody back in person for episode 197 of
The Inside Flap
as we creep and creep ever closer to 200 episodes of all three of us together. That does not including our inside chats that sometimes we put out. But yes, for our full episodes coming up on 200, we got a great guest for you this week. We're joined by author, fellow podcaster, and listener to the show, Robert Justice. He is the host of the Crime Writers of Color podcast, and he joins us to talk about his book, They Can't Take Your Name, which was named a runner-up for the 2020 Sisters in Crime Eleanor Taylor Blant Award.
Awesome. And he's a Denver writer.
That's
pretty cool.
So, I had a great chat with him, and we'll have that for you in just a bit. But first, I want to tell you guys a little bit about something that happened to me over the weekend as we are back in school. On Saturdays, working on the set for our spring production of Chicago, which is our spring musical, March 2nd through 5th. Everybody come out and see it. So we're there Saturday, and I'm noticing as we're getting ready to start building that there's still quite a bit of trash has accumulated on the stage where we're trying to build. And, you know, one thing you don't want to have is you don't want to have a messy workplace.
No.
So I'm like, all right.
Need a clean job site, Dave.
Yeah, you got to have, you know that from all the job sites that you visit. You got to have a clean job site.
I was at a very messy one today.
Oh, really?
Honestly, it bothers me and things get lost.
Yeah.
You know, and it isn't just a safety issue. I mean, but it is a safety issue.
It is a safety issue, too. You're absolutely right. Yep.
But to me, it's also a sign of efficiency in terms of what's going on.
Yeah, because you're spending half the time looking for tools or looking for
plumbing parts that should be there.
All kinds of stuff that you don't need to be doing. You don't need to be wasting your time. So I sent a couple of kids, Izzy and Petra, to do a little trash run. Now, a trash run, when you're working for me, means you're working for the school in the auditorium, it means you take the bins and you have to take them outside to the dumpster. Now, this involves the elevator. You have to take, so we're on like the stage level, which is a half a flight up from the main level. And so you can wheel the trash cans over the elevator, which is off to the side of the stage itself, the far right-hand side of the stage. You can access the elevator. I have a little key card because kids can't have access to the elevator, obviously. So I give them the key card. They get on there. They take it half a flight down. It opens up on the other side. Then they go right outside and dump the trash out. So there was two huge overflowing trash cans plus just some other various stuff like cardboard boxes. There were some huge pieces of rigid plastic.
What was the trash from?
Listen, trash in this auditorium accumulates. We've been working for a little bit on
the set. Okay, so it's some from the set.
It's from the set.
Okay.
It's wood.
Just
it's also just, I mean, props over the years, stuff just, and these are, it's a dark auditorium. There are corners in this. There's just stuff everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
All the productions that we do, there's just stuff.
There's something about me.
Clothing.
I can't do anything until it's clear.
It's bad.
Yeah.
So we just, a couple of us, we just went around, grabbed a bunch of random stuff. Like I said, the cans were overflowing, but we just kind of shoved everything into this corner. And I said to the girls, I said, here, just take it all. Just take it all. And there were like piles of stuff on the floor. Mm-hmm. Just take it all. So I forget about it. 5-10 minutes go by.
I feel a little worried that it was important now.
No.
Okay,
no.
Good.
Nothing was important. A few minutes go by, and I'm on the other side of the stage. I'm talking to Foster. And by talking to, I mean I'm corralling Foster. And Foster, great worker. Easily sidetracked.
Oh, sure.
Easily distracted. So I was always like, where's Foster? What is Foster? Okay, let me go grab Foster and make sure Foster is on track. Great kid. Love him to death. Drinks all the apple juice. I have to buy an extra thing of apple juice for this kid alone.
Really?
Every Saturday, because he will drink an entire thing of apple
juice.
He's like a 5-year-old.
Little hummingbird.
Yeah. Great kid, though. But easily distracted. So
I don't know if I'd ply someone like that with sugar.
I don't know. You know, you do what you got to do to keep these kids motivated. Remember, it's free labor. They're working on a Saturday for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Actually, 6 hours now. So, so I'm talking to Foster, and all of a sudden, I hear him say, shh, 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 quiet, quiet, quiet. I'm like, whoa, what? He said, shh, shh, hold on. And so I hush up. And it's kind of hard to hear because we have music blasting over the speakers. There's other kids working. There's the sound of the chop saw. There's the drills going on. And basically just a lot of noise, a lot of background noise. But then I did listen. And then off in the distance, you hear kind of muffled screaming.
Oh,
going
no.
On. Yeah, like muffled screaming. High-pitched muffled. And Foster looks at me. I'm like, I don't know what the hell this is. I'm worried some kid has just cut his arm off with a circular saw.
I was going to say, these are drama kids.
And they are, yes. Yeah. Well, no, they're tech kids.
Oh, that's different than drama.
Kids.
That's
they're
true.
They're different than the drama kids.
Yeah.
And they will be the first ones to tell you that.
That's
please
funny.
Do not.
I was
do
a tech kid.
Confuse these kids with the drama kids.
I was a tech kid
these
in
are
college.
The tech kids. So I mean, we hear this, and Foster says, the elevator. I said, what?
Oh.
He said, it's coming from the elevator.
Oh, no.
So we go running over there. And of course, everyone else now is interested as we are flying across the stage. And they start hearing the scream. So now there's like 12 of us gathered around the elevator. And we are hearing the scream. Now, listen, you would think there's two girls in the elevator, Izzy and Petra. You would think that along with them in the elevator is Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, and Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th. That's how loud these screams are. And they're not, I don't know how they have the breath control to scream nonstop, but it is nonstop screaming. And I'm like, I can't even like think of what to do because of the screaming going on. And of course, the 12 kids gathering around me, most of them are laughing.
Oh, they are.
They're just laughing. Ah, they're stuck in the elevator. They're stuck in the elevator. Ah, ah, ah. Help, right? So I'm like, girls, girls, girls. Finally, I get them to bring it down to a reasonable decibel level, like the what you would hear.
Now, do
at a
they sound
Pepsi Center
far away, like on a different floor?
They're right there.
They're right behind the doors.
They're right behind the and it's like
the elevator door.
The elevator, like stainless steel elevator door.
Sure.
Picture like your standard,
okay,
chrome, whatever that finishes of an elevator door.
Yeah, it's solid gold.
So I'm like, well, listen, Bruce, I've seen Bruce Willis, and this is my first thought. I'm like, I've seen Die Hard enough times to know you can just wrench this thing open. I mean, Bruce Willis makes it look easy in Die Hard.
That's true.
Well, it is not that easy to do in real life. Foster and I grab the chrome door. We pull that off, and that behind that, there's this metal door. Now, we're able to open the metal door like a half an inch, and the girls, they're like, ah, air, air, we can breathe, you know, and the elevator is only dropped down But it's only dropped down like a foot or so.
So it's below the floor.
It's below the floor.
Oh, right. That is a bad feeling. Yeah. I've been in elevators with that.
As far as I can tell.
Now, I don't know where you're going with this, but you know, like exiting an elevator at this point is not a good thing.
Well, why do you say that?
Because what if it starts moving?
Oh, right.
When somebody's halfway out.
Well, at this point, I don't know what to do. I still, because we can only get it open a crack, and we're pulling, and I'm thinking about grabbing like a pipe wrench and trying to lever it open. I don't know what
there
to
is,
do.
I will say, in elevators, there is a number that you can call in any elevator, right. And it'll take you to a person.
And I kept trying to talk,
or you can call the fire department.
And I kept trying to reason with these girls. There was no reasoning with them. I could not get a word in.
They're edgewise. Panicked.
They are not panicking. They are over the moon panicking.
It's
2,000% panic.
Wow. Like I can't.
Guys, if you could just take, like I couldn't get anything out. I couldn't get anything out. So Tracy's there, and Tracy says, another kid, she says, give me the key card for the elevator.
Oh,
I'll
smart.
Go around to the first level and see if
and
I
call
can
it.
And call it to bring it down. I'm like, great
that's
idea.
A good idea.
Foster and I,
wow,
we let the door close.
There's a kid who knows about elevators, right
exactly.
There.
So she goes around, and then we hear a ding. The elevator makes a nice ding, and the screams start to subside, but then the elevator starts to move, and then the screams go back up. It's moving! It's moving! So I don't know if they're happy or sad or what's going on. So I'm like, all right. So I go down the stairs to go meet them. Mm-hmm. What I hope is for a nice, fitful, and happy resolution. I run down the stairs, go around the corner, and there's Tracy with the key card, and the elevator doors are opening. Now, we are not the only ones in the building.
Okay.
Oftentimes we are.
Yeah.
There was a big boys basketball game between East and one of our rivals, South.
Whoa.
Okay, now anytime you have...
Those are definitely rivals.
Big high schools and a rivalry game, you're going to have Denver's Finest on hand.
Oh, that's true. You are.
And where the elevator comes out on the first floor is right next to the gym. And the game is getting ready to start. So this is what I see as I run around the corner. I look to my right. The girls, they run out screaming past me. They don't even think. They're not even. They just want to go and tell everybody what a horrible ordeal they've been through and how traumatic it is and how they're going to need years of therapy to get out of it. Run screaming right past me. The elevator is full of trash.
Oh,
and
there's
the bins there, and all the trash is on the floor. It's like piled full of trash. Then I see, staring right at me now, the only adult, are two of Denver City's finest, staring at me like, what in the hell is going on?
Now, are these the same police officers that visited your classroom back in the incident?
The SWAT team when you guys were swatted?
They may have been. I don't know.
That was skeptical of what you're teaching them?
Wouldn't that be ironic if it was?
The one guy, that's right, it was like, who saw the girls just want to have fun video on my screen. You know, how do you say about it? This guy did look a little familiar. He was looking at me with just utter... disdain, I don't,
what
disapproval.
Let me guess. He says, it's you again.
he didn't even say a thing. He just, both of them just stared at me as I scurried over to the elevator and collected up all the trash and had, I don't even remember at that point. I might have just blacked out because I don't remember who took the trash out.
Did they stand there the whole time while you did all this?
The whole time. Just stood there. Just stood there. Didn't say a word. Like, I tried to joke with him, like, elevator got stuck. Nothing.
That's weird.
Nothing.
Don't you think that's weird?
Yes, I think it's very weird.
Huh.
And now it lends credence to Andrew's theory about them recognizing me from this is the guy who shows Cyndi Lauper videos and calls it education. When I try to say, theater class. Yeah, So finally, I guess what ended up happening is that, I guess the elevator now works. I don't know what happened. Deb was like, maybe we should call somebody. I'm like, it's fine.
Sometimes they glitch. I don't know.
They glitch.
So, Dave, I think you should offer an olive branch. You should reach out to Denver's Finest and offer them to come do like a special acting class where they can do like trust falls and stuff like that.
I like it.
They certainly could use a lesson in communication as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it would be interesting.
Yeah, I like it.
It would be a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to get right on that.
Now, is there a chance the elevator was overloaded? Like, was the trash weigh so much?
It was not that heavy. No, we've had loads in that elevator. We've had a lot of trash and a lot of kids in there. So
I mean, who knows how old the elevator is? Maybe it needs to be serviced.
The building
is
from the 1920s.
Also, you know, we used to live in New York and I worked in a high-rise building. And I also, then I worked in another building. I had an elevator. It was like 5 stories. Uh-huh. But if you work around elevators, like in a building that has elevators, for any point in your life, you will get stuck in one. You will have a story about one. Like, it just happens.
Well, these girls are happy now to have a story.
So when I was in Germany, I was in Cologne, Germany, in language school. And this was, you know, several decades ago. But
You were in Germany?
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways.
Didn't know that. Interesting.
But they had an elevator in this building next door to us where we used to go eat.
Okay.
And this was an elevator.
Wiener schnitzel over there?
With
sauerkraut?
With no doors.
Wow.
Oh, one of those old European elevators.
And it's one of these elevators that constantly, it goes up and it goes down. And you simply have to time it and get on and off at the right spot. There's no door to open and close.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
There are no safety mechanisms.
Wow.
This thing just goes up.
Yeah, my kids could not handle that.
Then it goes down.
I don't know if I can handle that.
And you've got to time it, like, as far as getting on and off of it. Now, whether it still exists or not, I'm doubtful.
I think they do because Sylvia was talking to me about that the other day.
Yeah.
I think it's the new type of elevator.
Well, it's like those revolving doors that constantly are in motion.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that kind of deal.
I worked in an old building in New York, and we had that gate where you always worry that, careful, keep your fingers out of the gate.
Right.
Yeah, this
didn't. You know what I mean?
This didn't even have that.
Oh.
That's
crazy. I hated the gate, crazy. Though. Yeah. I might have been happy to
did
get rid
of it.
Did
you ever have an elevator operator in your...
No, I never did.
Did you ever get stuck in the elevator?
Yeah, but it was one of those weird things where it was between, like what you had, where I think we were either above the floor like a foot.
Right.
It didn't sit right, but the doors opened, so we hopped out.
And I think I remember you talking about
that. And then I've dropped things in elevator shafts before. Car keys, most notably.
I've been someplace where they had an elevator operator.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it's just effing annoying. It's
I
like,
think it would be. It's like a bathroom attendant.
It's like a little elevator.
Like a bathroom attendant.
And you got a person standing in it. It's like you're taking up a valuable spot here.
Uh-uh. Right.
Like you don't think we can push the buttons?
You got to tip the guy, too.
Oh, really?
Do you?
Are you supposed to?
The fucking guy in an elevator. Come on.
Well, I know. Seriously. The guy in the bathroom who hands you a paper towel, you're supposed to tip. You ever tip that guy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but that's a pretty crappy job. But
that is a... oh, okay.
Andrew's back, everyone.
He's back. Yes. Anyway, Laura, how has your week been?
Oh, my week's been pretty good, but I have a small story from our Tucson trip to share.
Oh, okay. Wonderful.
Yeah. So one day, I think it was the second day we were there, we took a group trip out, and it involves two cars because there were 10 of us.
Family members, yes.
So 10 of us together, and we went out to this Living Desert Museum, which is in Tucson. We've been to it before. It's the best I can describe it is a cross between a zoo and a botanical garden.
Yeah, that's a good way to think, because they have some animals and they have a lot of vegetation.
Pretty big, a lot of paths, a lot of winding paths. Like, you can't stand in one spot and see the whole thing.
Right.
It's laid out really well. It's nice. So we all stand there in the beginning at the entrance, and Kate's like, okay, how about we see the big cats?
Right.
And I say, great, we'll do that. Why don't I follow you? Okay. Kate has home field advantage. This is where she lives in Tucson.
As my sister, Kate. Yep.
Yeah. So she knows like what to go to, where to go. So I don't care also. So, because I've been there before.
Your prime, that would be like your go-to number one.
Yeah. See the big cats. We all like cats in the family. We're all cat people.
We're all cat
people. Yeah. Despite our cat who's glowering at Andrew. Yeah,
so he's up above, and he's already tried to attack Andrew once. We already had to stop the show once. You might not have caught up on that, but yes, he's now up on his perch. He's staring straight down at Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a leopard about to pounce.
Yeah. So we get started. But before then, I think we say as a group, hey, let's meet back here. Did we say that? I think we did.
I didn't even hear you guys say you're going to see the big cats.
So we said, hey, we're going to go see the big cats. Follow us. And Pat, I know Pat at least said, that sounds great.
Okay.
I thought that you guys all knew we were. I thought that Jake had said that he was. So Kate and I set out. We're in the lead with the three teen girls, the three teen cousins.
Three teen cousins.
That are there. Right. And so we start moving through. We are not going fast. We are stopping to look at things.
Okay.
We are talking happily amongst ourselves.
Okay.
We move through this winding path, and then we pause to look at an animal or a flower, who knows what. And look behind us for the rest of our group.
Sure.
Completely missing. No one that we know is behind us anymore. We were not moving fast. We weren't doing anything.
Nobody there.
So at this point, we're like, okay, we're on our own. So we split. We do our thing.
Wait,
right?
You guys split again? Like
no.
An amoeba?
No, it was just the five of us. So okay. We split from the group of five okay. Without meaning to split.
All right. Right.
So what you mean?
Was it just you and Kate at this point?
No, we had the three girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
The girls did separate from us eventually.
Okay. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
But that was willful.
Yes.
Yes. At one point, Julia
Brad
went off
Angelina,
by herself.
It was a willful separation.
And then Sylvia and her cousin Maddie went off by themselves. So it was just, I believe, just Kate and I for a bit.
Well, yes. Jake and I, we turned a corner and nobody was there.
You guys... We found this out because we did meet together to have lunch.
Yes, we did.
With just you and Jake, because you guys are the only people we could communicate with.
Right.
For
some reason.
Yeah. So the seven of us sat and had lunch together, and then we went to move off again as a seven-member pack.
Right.
And Kate and I turn around. You guys were gone. We walk back. And you and Jake are laughing and taking pictures of a cactus or something like this. And we're like, oh, well, no wonder. You had already stopped. Like you had gone literally two feet and had stopped.
Oh, I remember because I kept quizzing Jake on I was teaching him the different kinds of cacti.
Okay.
And I was quizzing him.
She's That's like, where'd they go on? Again? Oh, and then we're like, well, now we know why we got lost.
That explains it.
At one point during all this, because no one was answering their cell phones. We didn't know where your mom was, where Jake's mom was, where his stepdad was, where Pat was. At one point, we stumble across Pat. And he is standing with a confused look just in the middle of a path somewhere out there in the middle of this desert museum.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, there you guys are. I lost the group. He said immediately. He immediately lost the group. He had been on his own since, like, we saw him after lunch.
Oh, this has been hours.
Hours. Yeah, Pat had been on his own by himself. Could not find the group again.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So then...
The 60-year-old man just wandering around.
Then we all go. I don't know how we ended up getting Anita, though, your aunt.
My aunt.
Uh-huh. We ended up committing with her. We all said, okay, we're all going to meet back here at like 3.
All right. At the entrance.
At 3.
Yes.
So we are all at the entrance.
Everybody in the group at that point... received that message.
We did.
Yes.
We did.
Okay.
And so we're all sitting out there waiting.
Right.
Waiting.
In fact, we all got there a little bit early.
Oh, yeah. We were ready. We were done at this point.
We had enough.
We'd had a day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We were done. And so Pat had bought a bag of gummy bears and then did a really creepy move with the three teen girls that we all laughed at. Hey, ladies, do you want some gummies?
Just like that.
And they looked at him with such disgust and disdain on their collective faces that it made us laugh.
All right. That was a good one.
But then we're all waiting for Andrew. We were waiting for one person.
Yes. Now, Andrew, can you guess who that person might
3 o'clock comes and goes.
Mary Medicus.
Oh. Now, David.
Yes. Let me give you a ding, 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 ding on that one.
And Dave, why don't you tell the group?
Well, my mom, so they were doing a thing. You know, zoos are big with kids. I'm sure you've taken your kids to the zoo many times. We would go to the zoo.
All the time with Sylvia.
Many, many times when Sylvia was a kid. So they had this little, and we saw as we were walking around, all these kids walking around with egg cartons. And every once in a while, you'd see them at a little station, and they'd have their egg cartons open, and there'd be little tiny rocks in each one of the things. Well, apparently, there were 12 different stations scattered around the zoo where you could learn about different minerals and get a little rock to fill up your egg carton.
Mm.
Well, I guess somebody didn't get the memo that this was only for kids.
Because
Mary Medicus grabbed herself an egg carton when, as soon as she walked in.
Oh, my goodness.
And she had to go around to each one of the 12 stations to get her egg carton. And came back. Man, she came back full of vim and vigor, just talking about how she
and
had
here's what
the
I heard
greatest day ever.
From your aunt, who's Mary's younger sister. Yes. She says to me, she says, Laura, I haven't eaten lunch yet. And this is like 5:30. And I said, what happened? I said, we invited you guys to lunch. She said, oh, I saw the text. She said, I told Mary, hey, look, we can all eat lunch. They're all at this cafe. Let's go join them. Uh-oh. And Mary said, oh, no, I'm not hungry. I'm not hungry.
I've got rock stations to get to.
And so Anita's, this is where she messed up.
She's
instead of just saying, oh, let's just get something to eat. We'll come right back to this.
Right.
Or I'm going to get something to eat.
Right.
She assumed that Mary would eventually get hungry.
Oh, I see. That was her first mistake.
That's the mistake.
One, Mary Medicus, when she is on a task, she's going to complete that task until it's done.
True.
So she's going to add the rock collection to her snakeskin.
That's
oh,
right.
I forgot
right.
about that. We never asked to see the snakeskin.
The roadkill snakeskin.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
That she had my dad.
So that was the day, but I still remember like turning and looking, and Kate and I are like, where did they go?
Yeah.
We immediately lost half the group.
Hard to keep a group of 10 together.
We didn't think that we would be successful, but I didn't think we'd lose that early. Like we were within 10 foot of the entrance. Yeah. When we lost you.
I know Jake and I wandered around for a long time by ourselves.
And Pat was there by himself the whole time.
Yeah. And I don't know if we... I think there wasn't a lot of cell service either. If I'm
there wasn't. There actually wasn't. Yeah. Well, yeah, I know. There you go. Andrew, how have you been?
So, you know, it's funny. This is like week 3 of my unemployment. And let's see. I've managed to file 2...
You're still shaving.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he's shaving more now than he did when he was working.
Actually, you are.
Almost true, yeah.
Yeah, and you need a haircut, I think.
I need a haircut, but it's finding time for the haircut.
Oh.
And my boys need a haircut.
He's out of work, but he doesn't have time to
get a haircut. Let me get to that. So, you know, so I filed for 2 weeks of unemployment.
Okay.
But
both weeks have been denied.
Oh, really?
Now, I don't know why, because they don't tell me why it's been denied.
Really?
But, you know, and I try and call the number, and then if you're on hold for half an hour calling the number... Then they say, oh, leave your number and we'll call you back.
No, they're not going to call you back.
And so they haven't called me back. So like it's been like 3 days in a row where I called the number and like nobody's calling me back. So anyways.
Wow.
But I'm so busy with stuff. I've got like tax documents. I've got like the health insurance has been transitioning like within, if you think about it, within 5 weeks, it's transitioned to between 3 different health insurance companies.
That's confusing.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
And then let's see what else. You know, and then I had to take a trip to Maryland to basically square away some stuff there. You know, then basically I came back. Now, you know, we're looking at selling our house in June, and we're building a new house, right? And so it was kind of exciting when we get back. I get back Saturday night, like at midnight. But Sunday we drove out there and we looked, and our house is now all framed.
Looks great. The pictures you sent look amazing.
It's got a roof. I mean, and it's one thing, like you see the little patch of dirt, you see the foundation, but when you actually start to see the house and you can actually stand
exciting.
In the room.
I don't know why, but when you see a poured foundation, it looks small. Until they erect until they start the framing, and then it looks like, oh, okay, this is the size.
So that's exciting. And so basically I'm looking at like getting rid of stuff. So I decided to sell a trailer I had, sold it on Craigslist. And the guy's like, well, you know, if I can pay you an extra $50 to deliver it. So I'm thinking, oh, Monday, let me look at my schedule. Oh, unemployed. Yeah, I can deliver that trailer.
Sure.
And so, you know, I wait.
Where was he?
So basically he was on Jason Street in Denver.
Okay.
Now, I've collected.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and give out his home address?
Was it like South Jason near Kalamath?
It's like that. It's like downtown.
Other side of,
I'll get to it. Oh. It's a business district.
Okay.
So anyways, you know,
I go to businesses on South Jason Street.
Huh. Yeah.
It's
this
a
is a commercial. This is a warehouse area.
Oh, okay. I know exactly
now,
where
I'm going to tell you something here.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Please.
Okay.
Hang on.
Calm down.
Yeah. So I've been a comic book collector like for a long darn time.
You have.
And I remember I used to get comic book catalogs from, Mile High Comics. right? Because you could basically see, you could price out your comics, you could see what they're worth. Hmm. And I knew Mile High Comics because it's Mile High Comics.
Yeah.
I knew they were in Denver.
That's cool.
Didn't know where. Well, guess where? After I get done selling the trailer,
on Jason
I'm
Street?
Leaving, and right across the street is the Mile High Comics warehouse.
Wow.
Oh, now I understand the tech. And just sent me a picture of a warehouse with Mile High Comics on
that's
it.
That's cool.
See, well, now I understand.
And the thing is, you know, you don't understand what a thrill it is for me, like, to be a comic book collector. And Mile High is just like, you know, I mean, they are the company with, like, probably like the largest selection of comics and things like that. I mean,
really?
they have been there hand in hand with, like, the comic book industry.
Hmm.
In terms of all that. And
I didn't know that.
It was just really such a thrill. Now, I didn't really have the time to actually go in and like check
is
stuff out.
Is it a storefront or is it
a warehouse?
There's
a store. It's a both.
Oh.
It's
so both. You find your holy place, the Holy Grail, the Shangri-La.
Mm.
This warehouse is a mad. It was like an Amazon.com sized warehouse that I got a picture of with huge lettering.
That's exciting.
Mile High Comics. The place you've dreamed about since you were a kid, and you didn't go in.
Didn't have time.
No, I didn't have time.
You didn't have a job to get to.
But now, though, I know where it is. You know, I plan on going back.
He's
going
to spend a day there.
Yeah.
Where did you have to go that you couldn't?
So, I was waiting on a call back from unemployment office.
Oh.
And second, my wife and I were basically going to meet up for lunch.
Oh.
So, it was just,
a hot date.
Just
hot
getting
date.
Him. But okay. What I would say is, I've been so busy.
Where'd you guys go to lunch?
We went to Breckenridge Brewery.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And so
I haven't been there in a long time.
I've been so busy with everything. But you know, when I'm working full time, I don't know, you know, how I would have time to get any of this stuff done. And part of it too is so much stuff when I'm working full time and running a business and doing a podcast, you know, and everything else that's involved, being a dad, taking care of two dogs and two cats. I mean, you see where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
But
basically, I'm hearing you had to quit your job so you could sell.
That's right. I need to quit my job so I could catch up on my...
So you could live your life.
My private life. Right. But, you know, let's see. We'll see. I'm going to start sending resumes out in earnest.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it to the point where it's like completely revised.
Okay.
Ah,
updated. Sure. And I'll be starting to send out the new version
tomorrow.
It's a lot of work.
Looking for a job is a lot of work.
So hit him up at Andrew Dowd on LinkedIn, and you do all your, what do you do?
I'm a software product manager.
Maybe Mile High Comics needs a software product.
There you go. Hop in that warehouse and find out.
Well, and that's another discussion. I'll talk to you about that offline.
Hmm.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What does that mean, Dave?
I don't know what that means.
Mm.
All right. Well, on that note, let's move on to our guest, shall we? We're joined by Robert Justice talking about his book, They Can't Take Your Name. This is a searing, listen, I really enjoyed this book. This is a searing, provocative, and timely crime thriller set right here in Denver that surprises, thrills, astounds, and ask the question, what happens to a dream deferred? One of those dreams in question in this book is a life, specifically the life of a man named Langston Brown, who sits on death row, an innocent man accused of murder who's been imprisoned for many, many years.
Hmm.
Fighting to get him out is his daughter, Liza. Now, she has deferred her dream of becoming a musician to instead become a lawyer in the fight to get her daughter, to get her father out. She enlists the help of a man named Eli, who is pursuing his dream of restoring and opening up an old jazz club in Denver's historic Black Five Points District while battling crippling depression following the death of his wife.
Hmm.
This book skillfully intertwines issues of race, the prison system, police, religion, jazz, and Langston Hughes poetry while serving up a mystery with some jaw-dropping surprises. I found this book to be incredibly thought-provoking while pulling no punches, forcing us to take a look around us, not just at society in general, but ourselves and our own built-in prejudices. Really well done, and I love that it's set right here in Denver with a special appearance, Andrew, by the Corpse Flower. You went and saw Corpse Flower, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah, there's a great scene set at the Denver Botanic Garden revolving around the Corpse Flower. So Enjoyed this book immensely. And Laura and I just had a great chat with Robert. So here that is for you right now.
Let's all celebrate and have a good time.
Well, listen, Robert. It is it's great to talk to you and have you on the show. I absolutely loved your book. They Can't Take Your Name. So good. So it really hit me on a profound level. It's really, really well written and such a great story, an important story. I feel is a tale of death row, jazz clubs, and a plant named Stinky. Robert Justice, what was it that inspired you to write this book?
You know, there's the story, what gets you started and what keeps you going. So what started me writing the book was about 5-6 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with cancer and she went through all the treatments, multiple surgeries, and came out the other side cancer free and started moving on with her life. And as I'm watching her resume her normal life, I realized she's okay, but I'm not doing okay right now. Those months of watching her fight valiantly and come out the other side left me wounded, traumatized, scared of the greatest fear of my life, of losing her. And so I needed some place to sort through those emotions. And so I sat down and started writing this character, which became chapter two of the book. This man by the name of Eli Stone, who's living underground. He's lost his wife and he's renovating a jazz club to try and put his life back together. So that's what started the book.
Wow.
That is, that's a heck of a way to get started. I mean, we talked to a lot of different authors and all are motivated by different things, but that's a kind of a scary one right there.
Yeah, the first draft was therapy, and then the second draft, I said, now we need to turn this into a novel and remove the therapy and let's make this a story that needs to be told.
Did you talk to her about it or show her? When did you let her read it? I guess.
She knew I was doing something.
Okay.
She didn't know exactly how deep I was going into this.
Yeah.
I think when it started to turn into a novel and I realized this is not just a story about my grief. I remove that piece, this is a story about what I think is the greatest injustice in our justice system. And that is wrongful convictions that we live in a nation where they say 2-3% of convictions are wrong.
Wow.
And if you add that up, that means there are tens of thousands of people who are doing time for crimes they did not commit. That's been a passion of mine for my whole adult life. And I've always wondered, what can I do? And so this novel became a way of trying to enter the fray and do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I think it's great what you're doing. I know a portion of your book proceeds goes towards the Corey Wise Innocence Project. Is that something that you were personally affected by, or is it just something like a story that you heard about from before and you just became passionate about?
Not personally affected. Don't have relatives or anything that have been wrongfully convicted. Personally affected by the systems that make wrongful convictions. It's almost like we are so divided between Republican, Democrat, you name it. But one thing we can all agree on is people shouldn't do time for crimes they didn't commit. It may be the last bit of common ground we have. And if we can all agree on this, that this should not happen, then maybe we can start talking about the other things that go into this. I mean, race, class, culture, we got to talk about policing. And so this common ground allows us to talk about the other things that do affect all of us.
That's smart. Yeah.
And I think your book hits on all of that at some point, which is, I really like how you do that. Now, it takes place in the historic Five Points area of Denver. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of Five Points?
Five Points is a beautiful neighborhood that has gone through a number of transitions. And so originally, it could be called the heartbeat of Denver's Black community. It's where the Black community lived, found barbers, doctors, churches, everything there. In part out of necessity, is one of the few neighborhoods that we could live in.
Yeah.
But then as time passed and laws changed and those who could moved out, you had a few decades where things started to struggle, because what happens when you remove, when you have an exodus of leadership from a neighborhood, there's going to be problems and things that go along with that. So my novel is set in the 90s, where it's had a few decades of decline, but it's right before gentrification kicks in.
Right.
And it just, it's that middle ground area.
Yeah, and I know you heard me tell the story of running through, because I teach at East High School right nearby, and, you know, going out for a run and being accosted, yelled at, screamed at by a guy telling me to stop moving into the neighborhood. I felt horrible, terrible. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm White Devil running through your neighborhood. Robert, tell me, do I have permission? Should I stay? Like, what do I do? I don't know. I mean, should I not
run through there, Dave? I don't think you run through there in your little shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you do. Go run through any neighborhood you want. You're going to be just fine. But I think what came out for that man in that moment, is he's been there for generations.
Yes, definitely.
He has seen the neighborhood when people like you would not go there.
That's right.
And now it's become a neighborhood where people who would never go there are now wanting to purchase the houses and are driving up the prices so much that those who have been there for decades cannot afford the property taxes on the own house that they've had for forever. And so it's just a whole lot going on in neighborhoods like that. I remember the first house my wife and I bought just outside of Five Points, 28th and Josephine. So a 2-minute run from East.
Okay.
The original deed on the house said, do not sell to Negroes.
Wow.
That's how it was in Denver. And, you know, I love this city. This is the city I was born in. I love it. It's a beautiful place to live. But what I was hoping to do in this novel was peel back the layers and say, but not everyone here is living beautifully. And we need to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people who have moved here from other places.
Yes.
And they are not at all aware of the history. So I have clients who have moved into Park Hill, North Park Hill, which also is historically a Black neighborhood. And they don't seem to understand that at all. And it's frustrating to me. Yeah. And I can't even imagine what it would feel like if I were a different color, how frustrating that would be. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I appreciate you giving me permission to run through the neighborhood, but I don't think after what happened, I just don't feel right doing it. But,
I used to be a runner back in high school, college, and distance runner. And so I know the need just to get out there and stretch the legs. So you got to do it.
You got to do it. But I can find ways not to go through there. But tell me about the jazz club that Eli in the book is restoring. Is that, so I understand that is a real club back in the day?
Yes. In the book, I call it the Roz. Mm-hmm. In real life, you can drive by it. You don't have to run by it. You can go drive by it. It's called the Rossonian. It's this beautiful, majestic building, 3 stories high in the shape of a pie, because it's right at the corner of Five Points where you have these 5 streets coming together. Mm. And it was the jazz club back in the day where all the jazz greats would come through. But the way it would work is upstairs you had a hotel, because when Black jazz artists came through town and played in downtown Denver for white audiences, they weren't allowed to stay in Denver, downtown Denver. So then they would come to Five Points, play another concert just for free for the community, but then also stay there. And so it's just historic jazz club right across from Deep Rockwater, and a beautiful building, which is being renovated right now.
Is it? Are they turning into a jazz club, or what are they doing with it?
I think they're trying to hold on to some of the old while bringing in some new. So I'm hoping they'll do something there.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I love the title of the book, They Can't Take Your Name. And Langston at one point says, just that to a customer in the barbershop. Was that always the title of the book? I was kind of curious. And what about that quote resonates for you?
The original title was Langston's Dream.
Oh,
that's a good one, too.
Because I have the poetry of Langston Hughes going throughout the book, including when he asked the question, what happens to a dream deferred? So I called it Langston's Dream. The publisher said, that's not catchy enough. It sounds a little more like literary fiction.
And
they said, if we're going to kind of go after, this is a crime mystery novel, we need to have a title that matches. And so that title, or that phrase that he says to that young man, captures what he lost. That here you have this man who was a pillar of the community, and he's cutting hair in a barbershop, and he says to this young man, they can't take your name. And then he's wrongfully convicted, and that's the one thing he wants back. If only he could get his good name back. So it captured the desire of his heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's still a good title, but did you push back or did you just say, all right, yeah, whatever you guys want? I mean, first novel.
If they're going to pay for the editing and the distribution, they can have say on the name.
Yeah, I do love all the Langston poetry that you have.
Langston Dreams, that's a tough one. That would have been a tough one for me to give up though, because that's a great title. Yeah,
you would have dug in your heels, and the publisher would have.
No, I would have known better. Yeah, I hope.
Do you have some favorite Langston Hughes poems that really speak to you, or are you just like a fan of them all?
You know, I think my favorite one by him is the one that he wrote. I think he was like 18 or 19 years old. I've Known Rivers. Mm. And it's him talking about almost the rivers that have run through the history of his people from Africa to here. And it's hard to believe when you read it that this is a teenager writing this poem. So it's just brilliant.
Mm. Wow. When did you discover him? Do you remember? Because sometimes I'll remember vividly like where I was when I first read something or heard something music-wise. Do you remember?
I think it was in my early 20s because I had discovered Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. Yeah. And then wanted to know more about that, and then found out the interplay between Langston Hughes and Ralph Ellison. And so that's where, for me, it was an intellectual pursuit first before I fell in love with the poetry.
Oh, that's nice. And then let's see. One interesting point you raise in the book is how prisons are necessarily in the business of rehabilitation. Of course, we know that I don't know that hardly any rehab goes on in prisons much right now. And there's an appeal for small towns to have a prison. I guess it's a good job. There's money to be made. Along with wrongful convictions, is prison reform a passion, another passion of yours?
It is. I mean, just so many things we can tackle, but there's problems all throughout the system. But when you privatize the incarceration of people, and those companies need to have product return. If we think of it that way, their commodity needs to return for their business model to work. There is zero incentive to rehabilitate and have people come out the other side better. And then when you have small towns that their jobs didn't go from here to another town, they went to another country. And you have so many struggling small towns, and the arrival of a Walmart and the arrival of a prison is the saving grace of that town when it comes to jobs. It's just the system is wrong to begin with.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. But well said.
Walmarts and prisons. That could have been an alternate title.
That's your next title. Your next nonfiction.
Maybe you can work that into the next one.
I'll get on it.
Robert. Now, listen, there are some tough conversations in this book, none more so than I feel like the conversations you have between Eli and Sister Frances. This, as you put it, we have a quote, child of Africa talking to a quote, child of Europe about race, and the fear the sister admits to that white people have of black people. Where did this character come from? And were those conversations like tough for you to write about as you were writing this book?
They were, because you want to avoid generalizing. Mm-hmm. But I also, she was based upon an actual person I know who was a white teacher in a Denver public school.
Oh, East? Was it East?
No, it wasn't East. It wasn't East, but it's not too far from East. Too far from East.
Wow.
She was honest about some things with me. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do was create a character that, here's Eli, a young man, a young black man, but he's learning about race from an old white nun.
Right.
And it raises the question, where do we learn about these things? Where do we have these conversations? And then are wrongful convictions really based upon the wrongful convictions we hold? Because he holds convictions now about the way life works because of this conversation he had with this child of Europe as a child of Africa. Mm-hmm. And so it was just trying to add some nuance and complexity to where do we even learn about these things?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I loved it. I found it really profound and moving. And also a little shout out to the Mother Cabrini Shrine. So a nice talk.
Yeah. Talk about a place where you can go and get one of the best views of Denver.
Yeah. Yeah. You really can. Yeah.
Do
you
go up there? I've never been up there.
Never been up there?
You need to go.
I've never been up there. Yeah, I do. Have you run up there, Dave?
Yeah, I've been running up there. Of course. You're not going to find a place around Denver where I haven't been running. Come on. But speaking of quotes, you have a number of great quotes in here. One that stood out for me was one that Eli said to his wife, and that was a quote, and he says, and this was almost, you just had it in there as like a throwaway, and that's what I love about this book. Like, just everywhere I'd find these little nuggets and just kind of put them away for me. And this one was, quote, he says, "The biggest problem in America is not white supremacy, it's America's belief in black inferiority." That's a really powerful quote right there.
That was his conclusion after that conversation with Sister Frances,
right,
is,
yeah.
And that was my small attempt. When you use phrases like white supremacy, you're only choosing, those are fighting words. As soon as you throw those kind of things out there, I think there are those who are off the charts, on the edge, and you're never going to reach them. But then there are people of goodwill. And as soon as you throw out white supremacy, it may be true, but people of goodwill, they're only going to want to react to that. Mm-hmm. But what's the opposite of white supremacy, except there has to be a belief in black inferiority.
Right. Yeah.
And so when you add the other side, it hopefully has a chance of opening hearts to the real conversations that need to happen.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And then, not to change the subject, but I have not been here before, to see the corpse flower. Anyway, I've been to the botanic gardens many times. Have you experienced stinky?
What a great use of the botanic gardens in this book, Robert. I was jumping up. I was,
I've been there so many
bumping.
Times. I get stupid Nine News texts me every single time. The corpse flower. Yeah. Thank you, Nine News.
What a great use of it in this book. So
I have
so great.
Missed it every time it blooms.
Oh no!
I've lived here my whole life. We have a membership to the botanical gardens, and every time it blooms, I just get caught off guard and I'm doing something else and I miss it. And I'm only relying on reports, but I've seen it, but never in full bloom.
Yeah.
Oh, they gotta start selling your book in the gift shop.
They should. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. We need to sneak a couple copies in there.
Yeah, maybe we can sneaking into the. I could pick it. You know, I was, because I run around there all the time, and I knew exactly what you were talking about and where you were all throughout that scene. That was so great. That was so great.
And then the robbery that Langston is wrongfully imprisoned for, that's based on a real robbery.
Yes, it was originally the, what did I call it in the book? The Mother's Day Massacre.
Mother's Day Massacre.
In real life, it was the Father's Day Massacre that took place.
Doesn't have the same ring to it as the Mother's Day.
Right,
massacre.
It doesn't. Doesn't have the alliteration.
Yeah.
But it's a true story, and it's a huge part of Denver lore, where you have this white police officer who gets arrested for this horrific crime, and there's this Perry Mason moment in court where his lawyers just pull off this ploy of disguising famous people wearing a hat and their eyes covered to see if they really could identify somebody. And that was what allowed him to, you know, to be found not guilty.
Wow.
But I oftentimes thought about this crime that is still unsolved to this day.
Wow.
And just thought, if things were different in that, would that have worked if it was a person of color in that same moment? And it just didn't make sense to me. So I wanted to just twist that Denver lore into part of the plot line.
Oh, that's good.
And another use of a Denver landmark with the cash register building.
The cash register building.
Yeah.
That's right.
You gotta have that in there. Now, Robert, tell us, as we're talking to a fellow podcaster, and I've listened to your interviews, and you are a magnificent interviewer with your silky smooth voice. Mm-hmm. And now you've talked to some of the same authors we've talked to, although I'm very mad that you got to talk to S.A. Cosby. I would love to talk to that guy.
He is so fun.
Yeah. How did you get into that?
There is a group that was founded by three people, Gigi Pondian, Kelly Garrett, and Walter Mosley. It's called Crime Writers of Color. We're up to about 400. We're an unofficial association of writers. And if you are looking, I just want to say to anybody listening, if you are looking to diversify your bookshelves to look like this beautiful world we live in, if you love crime, mystery, thrillers, cozy, but you would like for it to take on the flavors of this world, then Crime Writers of Color, it's all of us authors at various degrees of various stages of our writing careers. You have people like S.A. Cosby, award winning. You have people just getting started. And So our website, crimewritersofcolor.com, you can see all those books, but I run the podcast for us where I just interview us about these different books to get the word out.
And I see the organization just are getting a major award from the Edgars.
Yeah, that was fun to see. Just that's another exciting recognition there. But you're right. We talked to the same writers. You've talked to John Vercher and Wanda Morris and
John Vercher's book. Oh my God, how great was it? Oh wow,
one of the best writers out there.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great guy. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Robert. So are you in? So, but do you live in Five Points? Are you living in Five Points?
No, I'm out I'm in Green Valley. So the opposite side of the city is you.
Oh yeah.
Is where I am right now.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, well, I used to teach out that way over at Knoll Community High School, which is now no longer exists anymore. But
absorb by my mom. Yeah.
So where did this so you've got this book now. Are you continuing on with the characters? Can we expect more out of these characters?
Yeah, absolutely. Because first of all, you have two people that you're wondering if their relationship is gonna work. You have Eli and Liza.
Right.
And they've both gone through a lot. The next book that I am working on, working title right now, is King's Nightmare, because I had Langston's dream. So King's Nightmare.
Well, they're not, you know, they're not going to let you use that one.
They're not. But at least I can say it now.
I like it.
So Martin Luther King Jr. said that his dream turned into a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And there is a real life wrongful conviction that happened here in Denver, where you have a man. His name is Clarence Moses L. He was sentenced to 48 years in prison. He served 28 before he was exonerated. The reason why he was convicted is that there was a woman who experienced the worst thing a woman can ever experience. She survived it. She did not know who did it to her. And then she had a dream. And in her dream, the face that came to her mind was her neighbor, Clarence. And so the testimony in court was based upon that dream. And her dream became his nightmare.
Whoa.
And so how do you exonerate yourself when that's what put you there? So I'm going to use that story as the basis for the fictional story. But in the end, I want to honor his story and also her story, because there are two victims in this.
Mm.
Wow.
What a story. Man,
it's a terrible story. Yeah.
But we will look forward to reading it. All right, Robert, it is now time for our segment. This is what we call Quick Six. Six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Are you ready?
Oh, you know I'm prepared for this.
I'm sure you are.
I can come over and sit on the floral settee and do this with you.
Nice. I like that. All right. Very
nice. We'll have to have that happen.
You're going to have to make that happen.
Kick Andrew aside.
Yeah, I was going to say. Andrew aside.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be there. All right, Robert, what is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
It was The Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix, just that Michael Connelly series of novels. And the remake, I thought it would have me thinking about Matthew McConaughey when he did the movie, but this remake on Netflix makes you forget Matthew. It's really good.
Oh.
How can you forget Matthew McConaughey? Wow, high praise indeed.
That's how good it is.
Okay.
Have not seen it.
I've heard that's good, though. I have heard that's good. So, Robert, what fictional world or place would you like to visit?
First of all, I'm being thrown off. In the podcast, there's music playing right now.
I'm
going to add that later, because I'm not getting the full effect.
Sorry, we add that in later. We add that in at post.
Fictional place, it would have to be Wakanda. I'm a huge Black Panther comic book fan. When the movies came out, I've been to several places in Africa, but I would love to visit Wakanda, a place that is untouched by colonialism and has a secret resource that is changing the world.
So, awesome.
Have you seen the latest one then, I assume? I have not seen it.
Yeah, Wakanda Forever. Seen it a couple times.
Okay, yeah, I like the Rihanna songs from that a lot.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, really good. Yeah,
we need to get on that.
That's a good answer. We have not had that.
No, yet. That's a new one. That's a new one.
We have it also.
Well done.
Yeah. Everyone gets Middle Earth, Robert.
I'll stick with Wakanda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Middle Earth and Narnia over and over again.
That's like, right.
All right. Yeah. Enough. All right, Robert, how about this? A top five favorite movie.
First of all, anything with Denzel Washington. Yeah, I love Denzel. Yeah. But the one movie of his that I watch over and over is an older one called The Book of Eli.
And I've not seen that.
It's about a guy. It's kind of in a dystopian, apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic kind of world. And here you have this guy who has the last copy of the Bible on Earth, and he's walking west because he heard a voice, and all these people are trying to get it from him. Oh. And it's just, it's an incredible story.
That grabs me. That sounds amazing. I think I've heard of that. I love
Denzel. I've definitely heard of it. I have not seen it, but anything
like Denzel with the as the drunk airline pilot. I thought he was brilliant at that.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, wasn't one of my favorites, but he did a good job.
Oh. All right, easy, Robert, easy. it's not a great movie, but just him in it. Like any movie that he's in it, you can watch because he elevates it.
All he's in. Just, he's all in.
Even if the movie's terrible, you just watch Denzel do his magic.
Right. How about a top five favorite book of yours?
So there's an author. He's actually a Pulitzer Prize journalist, but he also writes novels. Leonard Pitts Jr. And he wrote a book called Free Man. And I normally don't like books set during slavery. I just usually shy away from them. But this book is so beautiful because it imagines the first day after slavery. So slavery has been ended. And there's this man who has escaped north, and he hears that slavery is now over, and his first thought is of his wife that he left behind, and he just starts walking south. And it is just this beautiful tale of this man going to find his wife and to bring her back. And it has, you don't want to look at the last page until you get to the last page, because the first line and the last line are just the perfect marriage of first and last lines. So I love that book.
Why would I look at the last page first? Robert, do you read it? You don't read who would read the last page first?
Sometimes you're flipping through and you flip and you just catch a look, and you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that on
No, this. You never do that. That never happens.
That's why I read Kindle.
You can't do that on a Kindle. That's true. All right, stay away from the last page on that one. All right, Robert, here we go. Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
So as an introvert, The most horrific thing I can think of is doing karaoke, which also means I'm prepared in case I have to. I never have. Yes. But if I had to, it would be a song that everybody could sing. And so for me, it would be Celebration by Kool & the Gang.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Because in the beginning, you really don't have to be able to sing. You can kind of mumble your way through that, and then everyone will join you on the chorus. So that's what I did.
I'm introverted as well, and that is my plan as well, is to pick a song where it won't just be the focus on me and get everybody together. Yeah.
That's right.
Robert, you host a podcast. You can't be an introvert. Come on, Ben.
Well, I'm just talking to a microphone and my screen. So,
okay. Well, that's why you do use the modulation. So you become a different character when you're in your podcast. Okay.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
Well, it's in preparation for a podcast interview coming up in about a month or so. But Cheryl Head, who is a member of Crime Writers of Color, she has a beautiful book called Time's Undoing.
What a title.
It's about a black journalist, modern day, who is searching for the answer to the unsolved murder of her grandfather back in the 1920s. But it's based upon Cheryl's family lore. Her actual grandfather was murdered, and so she takes what the family history and then writes it into a novel.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
All right, let's share some podcasting. So when you I need to know, so I'm always looking for tips. So like when I'm reading a book and I gotta interview the author, I got a little sticky notes and just put a little sticky. What do you do, Robert? Laura takes a picture, which I don't know why she
Because I'm reading on the Kindle.
Okay.
Well, on the Kindle, I'll bookmark on Kindle and remind myself to go back to those pages. Sticky notes. I dog ear all the pages.
Okay. Robert, come on. Do you really?
Books were meant to be used. They were meant to be used and enjoyed.
Yeah.
I don't.
You got to crack the spine first.
I don't feel right doing that.
It's your book.
Okay.
It's your book. You can do it.
You've now given me permission to not only run through 5 points, but also to dog ear a book. So
there you go.
All right. Well, Robert, listen, it's great talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on. Let's do this again. We loved your book, They Can't Take Your Name, and it's just been a lot of fun chatting with you.
Likewise. And Dave and Laura, I want to say this. I know how hard it is to do a podcast. The amount of work it goes in just to schedule, but then also to do it the way you do it, where you actually read books so that you can ask informed questions and then the amount of work behind the scenes, editing and everything. So for all of us who listen to your show, thank you, thank you, thank you. And Andrew, you're growing on us. He's growing on me. I didn't know what a lit RPG was until Andrew, and I don't want to read one, but at least I understand it. So
no, for all definitely of you, don't want to read one. Okay, great. Well, we appreciate it.
Andrew grows on all of us.
Robert, have a great day. It's great talking to you. We appreciate it. And
thank you.
And let's do this again.
All right, take it.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Appreciate
bye.
Bye bye.
The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Thank you so much to Robert Justice for joining us. Check out his book, They Can't Take Your Name. Really good. All right, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Where we are, I don't know where we are.
All right, Laura, what do you have for us this week?
I have a book called Lessons in Chemistry. And right now I am looking at, Mr. Andrew Dowd, who has the smile of a delighted, 12-year-old boy on his face, staring at, the Boston Miami basketball game that's on the television.
The TV on.
He looks so happy, Dave. He told us that he has three fantasy league members playing tonight.
We're going to pause.
He can
focus on this.
He looks so happy.
Yes, it's so the game is within 3 points. There's like 2 minutes and 20 seconds left.
Just let it go.
I've got three fantasy players. We can resume it after the show.
We'll watch it.
And we'll watch the last 3 minutes. Yeah.
He is, I haven't seen him look that happy in, I don't know.
And I've never seen him watch a basketball game except for a Nuggets game in person. So it's very interesting.
Okay. So my book's called Lessons in Chemistry. Okay. It's by Bonnie Garmus. So this book came out in April of last year, 2022.
All right.
It was an instant bestseller. Stephen King called this book a feminist catch-22. Mm. It is 4.37 on Goodreads right now. Crazy. If you haven't read it and you're female, you have probably heard about it. I have been hearing about it for a while, and I was really put off by the cover. It looks like a really light rom-com. I read light rom-coms, but this cover, I find the cover incredibly annoying.
Okay.
Other people might like it. I was put off by it. I did not want to read it. I resisted the book for months and months and months. My mother wore me down and convinced me to read it, and I'm here to say, listen to your mother.
Oh, shout out to Cindy Lee. Okay.
Yeah. She's like, no, the cover's terrible. It doesn't reflect what's inside the book cover.
Okay.
Because they're like, it's feminist. It's blah, blah, blah. I'm like, there's no way with this book cover that this is a feminist book. So this is about a chemist named Elizabeth Zott. She's working in a chemistry lab on an all-male team in the early 1960s for a research institute.
Okay.
So the first part of this book is about her experience working at this institute as a chemist. Rampant misogyny, also misguided men, maybe who don't dislike women, but who just don't know any better maybe because they're 1960s kind of brainwashed with what's going on.
Right.
And also she is falling in love with a Nobel Prize nominated chemist who sees her as his equal. So he's a great guy.
Okay.
Great. The second part of this book is Elizabeth later. She's now a single mom. She's the host of a hit cooking show called Supper at Six, aimed at the stay at home mom, which is kind of interesting, to get your supper ready for your family by six.
Hmm.
So how does she get from there to there? Why would this woman who, she doesn't want to do anything that's seen as stereotypically female, why would she be the host of a cooking show?
Right, yeah.
So how does she get there? So the story is very entertaining. It's fast paced. I found it frustrating at times, just with the roadblocks put in front of her by sexist men. Yeah, it was a little bit frustrating. And, it's 1960s. I don't think there were that many women working in chemistry labs. She's not able to get her PhD, whereas if she was a man, she could have gotten her PhD.
Right.
Like all kinds of different things. Elizabeth is not a woman I could relate to at all. However, I could empathize with her. And so that's all I needed to enjoy this book.
Sure.
So it's a really funny feminist story. it's a funny story too. So it's not just like, here, I hate men. and not all the men are bad. Actually, there's quite a lot of great men in this book too. But it's a funny story about a smart, scientifically minded woman living and working in America in the 1960s. So it's a little bit historic fiction as well.
60s.
So there is a limited TV series based on this book coming out this year on Apple TV, starring Brie Larson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we can look forward to that. It's crazy because the book came out in April. They must have sold the rights before the book came out.
Probably could be.
Yeah, and they're hustling it in. Apple ordered it straight to series, which I don't think they do very often. So I think that's tells you what kind of book it is as well. And of course, haters gonna hate. So there are like a couple of 1-star, 2-star reviews, people saying, oh, it doesn't live up to the hype.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's been a little overhyped. Just, it's an enjoyable book. Yeah. It's funny.
There you go.
And it's smart and I enjoyed it. And it's called Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Gurmis.
All right.
So question is, because you know, I listened to the premise, you know, and you kind of wonder, like, as far as the transition goes. Now you said it's a comedy, but is it somewhat tragic?
Yeah,
in terms of what happens. Okay,
yeah, it definitely is. I don't want to give anything away, so I'm not saying it. But the book has a lot of tragedy in it, actually, mixed in with the comedy, like multiple things of tragedy in the book. There is a great dog in this book also. I'm blanking on the dog's name right now.
A dog named Snuggles.
But I love the dog in this book.
Sparky.
He also is not identifiable. Okay, so Elizabeth is not a woman. Like, she's gorgeous. She's fit. She knows how to cook. She's a chemist. Like, she's all these things that, you know, I'll never be. I can't relate to this. And of course, she has like the smartest dog in the world. And I look at our dogs and I'm like, our dogs could never do this. No.
Some dogs can.
But it's an enjoyable book.
Okay, very good. All right, well, check that one out. That's recommended by
Laura Medicus.
And my book this week,
Dave Medicus.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Is a good one. It is called Beasts of the Earth by James Wade. This is a richly evocative mystery that is emotionally wrought. It is a deeply intense noirish thriller and beautifully written, very well written.
It's a great title.
Oh, it is a great title. And make sure you get, because there's actually more than one book called Beasts of the Earth.
Oh, really?
Yes, believe it or not, this is James Wade. Because I checked it out of the library, and then I started listening to it, and then I realized it was a different book. So, yes, get the James Wade. I'm sure the other book is fine, too. I don't know anything about it. This is James Wade. And it's actually it's set in two different timelines. One timeline is 1985 in a small town in Texas, and then the other one is set 20 years before that in the swamps of Louisiana. So in the 1985 timeline, we meet Harlan LeBlanc. He is a loner living out a solitary existence as a groundskeeper at a local high school. Here's a guy who doesn't speak much. He kind of keeps to himself. He minds his own business. He just goes about his job daily. He befriends a young man named Gary. Gary was once a football star at the school but didn't have the grades for college, so he's working with Harlan now on the grounds. One day, without giving anything away, a violent event occurs, and suddenly Harlan finds himself in the middle of a mystery and has to find his way out of it. Meanwhile, in the storyline from 20 years before, a young boy named Michael, who is living with his mother and sister, he is awaiting, and not just awaiting, but dreading, the return of his father from prison. He's about to be released as he served time for child molestation. When his father does come home, it is as if evil has been unleashed upon the house, and Michael runs away, eventually being taken in by a man named Remus, who becomes a sort of surrogate father for Michael. This is a beautifully and elegantly written novel, a novel about fate, about free will, a compelling piece of fiction. It is dark, but yet it is infused with interesting characters who have something to say. I really enjoyed this book. Check it out. It's a literary thriller, character-driven, and just really well done. And this is one that'll kind of get into your skin and make you think a little bit. Very atmospheric, very, very dark. It's not a.
It does not sound light,
Dave.
It's not
a pleasant book. if you're like your book, you would describe that as a pleasant book.
No, maybe not. There's a lot of dark stuff in that book. Okay. It's not the cover. Yeah, makes it look pleasant.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is a dark book as well, but
not as dark as yours. It's very, honestly,
very, very well done. Beasts of the Earth by James Wade. All right. Andrew Dowd.
Andrew Dowd.
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ, blow my speakers up tonight. I'm a fight.
Now, everybody, please enjoy these walk-up songs one last time, as next week we'll have some new songs.
Yeah, we'll have to work on finding some new material.
2023.
So my book this week, science fiction. It is a...
Wait, whoa. Stop the presses. Science fiction.
Okay. So I was wondering, I was wondering what was going on.
Andrew,
here.
Yeah. Andrew looked at you like truly puzzled. Like, what happened here?
What did I mess up like this time?
Just doing a little shtick.
So
little shtick.
Man, I felt like I was home with the wife. All of a sudden, flashbacks. So
I feel like there should be like an old man in the audience like yucking it up at that.
So
her.
So now
Henny Youngman.
Yeah. You know. Both Laura and Dave's book, somewhat heavy in terms of subject matter.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And so typically, I would say, you know, I'm science fiction, fantasy. It's a nice, light book.
You got a dark one?
But I don't know. I'm sitting there like this book,
mm-hmm.
and there's something about this book that was just different than other books. And that's what I was wondering. It's like, maybe this book really wasn't that light.
Hmm.
And as I get into it, well, you know, you'll have to let me know if you think maybe it just wasn't that light of a theme. And so, and I guess you could say this book had a bit of gravity, but of course it's called Escaping Gravity.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And so it is.
It's feeling good.
It is book one of the Infinite Horizon series by J.D. Sullivan.
Okay.
339 svelte pages.
Not too bad.
Not bad.
And so the book starts with the character Dylan McKay, and Dylan McKay is an 18 or 19-year-old you know, I guess he's a teenager, but he's basically taking college courses in law. And the book opens with him finding out that he's been accepted as an intern. And we'll get into a little bit in terms of him, and he sees this being accepted as an intern is the path to what he really wants to do. And this internship is really an out of this world internship because of course the internship is basically going to allow him to get on a spaceship and go gallivanting around the galaxy, right? So it is truly a once-in-a-lifetime, out-of-this-world opportunity.
Sounds fun.
So he has to introduce it to his parents. And his parents, are, of course, lawyers. They are diplomats. But they are lawyers and diplomats that are known throughout the galaxy, right? They are very well-known for what they do.
All right.
And their parents expected that Dylan was going to follow in their footsteps. Well, here it is. It's like, mom, dad, I've been accepted in this internship where maybe millions of people have applied and I have been chosen. You know, I've got to do this. And his parents are like, well, there's some sort of emergency going on. We have to go. And so they disappear to like the Senate, you know, and then basically then things start to go wrong. Now, a lot of times I am, let's say, critical of a book. And maybe I will call it sort of an out of the frying pan, into the fire book, into the volcano book, into the internal temperature of the sun book. I mean, basically where things start happening and there is no rest and things just...
Yeah, you do hate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and this book had a bit of that, but it somehow manages to pull it off, right? And maybe it's because there is a little bit of a pause in between some of this. So Dylan tells his parents what's going on. His parents are like, well, we're going to talk about this.
Hmm.
Well, the next thing you know, the planet is under attack. He can't get a hold of his parents, but he gets a call from Shariza Rusalaru, and she is a Leonid. Now, and the internship he got is to basically go to work as the intern to basically learn all about engineering, mechanics from Shariza Rusalaru, who is a Leonid. Now, Leonid, she is like a cat-like humanoid-type creature.
Okay.
She is extremely smart. She has the fastest spaceship by far in the galaxy, with technology that nobody else possesses and nobody else understands. And the reason I say this isn't a typical light book is what you also find out is she is also the last of her species.
Oh,
really?
Because somebody has committed genocide against her entire species.
Wow.
And Shariza and her brother had just created this brand new spaceship. And the brother basically tells him, and I won't give too much away, but the brother basically says, we're all doomed, we're all dying, you know, I'm not going to survive much longer. Basically, get that spaceship and get as far away from us as you possibly can. Save yourselves, you are, you know, our species' only hope. And she basically flees, and she is the only one of her species that's been able to escape the plague. But here she has this magnificent spaceship called the Malshecht, and you find out later what Malshecht means, and she's able to escape. Well, now here she comes back. She selected Dylan to be an intern. The planet's under attack, and she basically says, Dylan, this is Shariza, and if you want to save your life and if you want to start the internship, you need to be at the spaceport in 5 minutes, and I'll pick you up. Right. And the planet is under attack. So he drops everything, you know, he stuffs some stuff in a duffel bag, heads to the spaceport. She picks him up and everything starts. Right. I mean, everything really just takes off in this book and everything goes from there. And so Dylan ends up becoming partners in crime. And I shouldn't say crime, but partners in terms of like this venture. And so he's learning to become an engineer. He is learning, you know, How does the faster than light technology, how does it work? And Shariza is the most brilliant engineer in the galaxy, right? And so what she can teach him and what she's promising him basically will make him, you know, an elite engineer and spaceship mechanic, right, throughout the galaxy. I mean, without a doubt. And this is the opportunity he saw. And that's also what he wonders too is, well, why did she pick me? And you also find out a little bit about why she picked him. And I don't want to give too much away in terms of the book. Now, there's also an AI, an artificial intelligence, that operates the spaceship Malshecht, and the AI is named Winston. And Winston is always giving Dylan a very hard time on the ship. You know, he's constantly badgering him, you know, as far as that goes. So Winston is not a nice AI. He is a very
pain in the ass. AI.
Yeah, and he is. And so, you know, this book there are rescues. You know that they have to go perform. Shariza's basically hiring out our service to go and help people improve their spaceships. I mean, not improve them to the point where they could compete with Malshecht, but she's out there improving it. And, you know, the balance of power in the galaxy, things aren't what they seem, right? There's like a tentative peace and people are kind of getting along, but, you know, but politics is being played, right, to the edge of brinkmanship. And of course, what Shariza is trying to find out is really trying to solve the mystery of who killed off her entire species. And of course, Dylan gets involved in that as well. And Shariza did not really want Dylan to get involved, but Dylan said, look, I care about you because this is important to you. This is important to me. And so that's part of it, is they're trying to solve the mystery of the genocide. Who did it? What was their motive? And I won't give too much away, but clearly this Leonid species was extremely smart. You know, they had an edge over everybody, but I won't give away in terms of like what the cause of the genocide was. Now, there's two more books in the series. I've already read all three books.
Oh.
But it was very compelling, and it was just something about it that is different, right? It's a different type of sci-fi read than your average book.
I have a question. Have you done more reading since you've been home? You've been busy though. You've been in Maryland.
You know, when I wake up at, you know, like 4 a.m.
uh-huh.
and I can't sleep.
Are you still waking up at 4 even without a job to get up and go to?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wake up.
You just can't.
It is what it is.
Okay.
But this is book one in the Infinite Horizon series, Escaping Gravity by J.D. Sullivan.
All right. Recommended by
Andrew Dow.
Which means it's time for the
audiobook of the week.
And my pick this week is called The Choice by Gillian McAllister, read by Katherine Lee McEwen. So you guys remember the movie Sliding Doors, right? Andrew, do you know what the setup is of Sliding Doors?
I do not.
Okay. In this movie, basically, it's Gwyneth Paltrow.
We tried to watch it again with Sylvia.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It was really bad.
Terrible. But it's famous.
In my head, it was great.
It's famous for the twist. Not the twist, but the setup of it. It's what would happen if you, like, the timelines diverge. So in one timeline,
you make the subway train. In another timeline, you don't make the subway train.
And you go back and forth between the two timelines.
Yeah, I was just hoping that the sliding doors in this book work better than my sliding doors at home.
I know, right? Yeah. That's funny. That's we have a real janky sliding door here.
Yeah, you build your muscles up opening and closing it.
Yeah.
No matter how many times I spray it with WD-40. Well, this book, The Choice, it would be like that movie if that movie was good and if that movie was a book. And that movie was a murder mystery and not a romantic comedy.
Whoa.
This is a hell of a book.
I am interested.
Yeah, so the book opens with a woman
named... Gillian McAllister is a really good writer.
She wrote Wrong Place, Wrong Time, which was on my list of the top. Yeah. And I'm going back and
reading... People love that book.
I'm reading all her books.
Oh.
But now, this is like the third one of hers I've read. And she's written other ones, but they're only available in England. So I don't know where I'm going to go. Very disappointing. But anyway, this is a good one. It opens up with a woman named Joanna. Now, Joanna is on her way home after a night out for drinks with friends, and she's walking through a neighborhood in London, not a very nice neighborhood. Suddenly, she hears coming up behind her footsteps, and these footsteps are approaching at a very, very rapid rate. Now, she's thinking that this is the guy at the bar. There was a creepy guy at the bar who hit at her and hugged her, and she thinks this guy has followed her and is about to attack her. So she, just as the footsteps hit from behind her, she pushes him down a flight of steps.
Oh, no.
Right? And this guy lands at the bottom of the steps, and he doesn't move. And he's lying there, unmoving. Now, she has a choice.
Can she tell if it's the creepy guy?
No, he's face down.
Okay.
She can either A...
I encountered a creepy guy at the Walgreens, and I got to tell you, as a woman, when you encounter the creepy guys, you get back in your car, and you're just like, ooh, remind me not to go in that one again.
Right. Well, she has a choice now. She can either call the cops, but if she calls the cops, then they're going to come, and she might be responsible for killing a man. She doesn't know this guy is motionless here. Or, no, listen...
Scamper home.
It's late at night. Nobody's seen this happen. She could just go home. So this is where the book diverges. And from this point on, you get alternated chapters.
Oh, that's so good.
One chapter is called Conceal. The other one is called Reveal.
So choose your own adventure.
Yes, she chooses. In one parallel universe, she reveals her crime to the cops. In the other universe,
she conceals it.
She does not.
Now, what decade does this take place in?
It's current. Current
okay.
timeline.
No, and
she's trying. She actually is walking home. There's CCTV. She's also
CCTV.
She's trying to call her husband on the phone. She doesn't have good service. She tells him that there's a problem. And
what would you guys do?
Well, and this was asking about the decade because you've got your cell phone, right? So it's pretty easy.
You can track where you were.
Well, not just that, but it's pretty easy to basically.
Call 911.
She could basically report.
And in the one timeline, that's exactly what she does.
I would have called
you
immediately.
Call. Well, you have to call.
Because I would have panicked.
Because if this is the 60s or the 70s or the 80s, when not everybody, it would be a lot harder.
You have to call.
Yeah.
Also, what if he's not dead? What if he's just knocked out?
And that's just
And you can get him help.
Right. Well, this book answers all the questions in both timelines. It's just fascinating. It's one of those books you just have to find out what happens, and it's really interesting to see the different ways that this book takes. It just kind of both paths take different courses, and it's fascinating just to go back and forth between the two realities, wondering where.
So, are you saying the '70s version of yourself, Andrew, would have just scampered away?
That's what it sounds like.
Well,
it is something you think about, though.
I mean, technology changes.
Yeah,
changes it.
You would definitely. be able to consider not calling at that point.
And it's like, do you have a dime to drop it in the phone booth?
Well,
and not just that, but
point.
Like you said,
just...
with the CCTV,
yeah.
You know that if you walked away, nobody would really know that you were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without it, right.
Yeah.
And then here you're in a neighborhood, maybe they have CCTV, maybe they don't.
They pretty much all do.
But in just a regular neighborhood and it's dark.
I don't know. I mean, just from the Idaho murders, like there's homes
cameras.
With cameras.
There's cameras
there's
everywhere.
Personal cameras.
And there are.
There's cameras everywhere.
Well, this book will answer all those questions for you. So take a listen to
it. It sounds good.
Let's listen to a clip. This is The Choice by Jillian McAllister, read by Catherine Lee McEwen.
It starts with a selfie. He is a random. We are not even sure of his name. We are always meeting them whenever we go out. Laura says it's because I look friendly. I think it's because I am always daydreaming, making up lives for people as I stare at them, and they think I'm inviting them over to chat. In the frame of his phone screen, camera facing forward to us, his teeth are white and slightly crooked, his nose hooked. Laura leans over to press the button on the phone. Her long, slender arm is captured at the edge of the display. It's covered in bangles and bits of thread and a homemade bracelet. She's a hippie at heart. She takes the photo, and now we are frozen on his screen. I wonder if he'll keep it, that photograph of us that now belongs to him.
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. Check that one out. So. I really loved it. Thanks once again to Robert Justice, Denver's own Robert Justice. 5 points. Great talking to him. Check out his book, They Can't Take Your Name. That'll do it for us this week. We'll be back with an all-new jam-packed episode for you next week. Until then, my name is Dave Medicus. See ya.
Adios.
Big Brother is watching.
Andrew, you're growing on us.